Howdy and welcome to River Talk, hosted by our podcast, hosted by Priscilla Macy, Zach Collier, and me, Eric Weiseth. This week, our big topic is an interview with Brett Burns, and we're going to talk about center lines, and it should be pretty fun. But before we get to that, we'd like to start with some River news of the week. So, Zach, you have any? Oh, and Priscilla's off this week doing Priscilla stuff, so, yeah. You know, just Zach and I, sorry, to all those who listen just for Priscilla and the funny things that she says.
Yeah, you can just hang them now if you don't hear Priscilla, that's or shut it down. She's not going to be here this week unless Brett wants to imitate her.
I don't know if I'm going to be good enough at that, I guess.
You can try. You can try.
Just start stereotyping boaters into groups. Yeah.
Right. Oh, man, you missed last week. Eric, she did a pretty good job.
Awesome. I look forward to it. I'll have to listen to it.
Yeah, so, yeah, for news this week, the first thing is Priscilla's going to the Sycan River, and Eric, she texted us about that, and not many people know about the Sycan. When I'm studying all the wild and scenic rivers in Oregon, and that's one that popped up, and it's a really unknown multi-day trip in south central Oregon, and I'm super excited to hear what she says about it. Supposedly, there's a Grand Canyon of the Sycan, and the people that have done parts of it say the bugs are so bad you have to wear a bug suit the entire time. You cannot take the bug suit off.
That sounds like such a Priscilla Jacob kind of trip. Like they're going to come back and just like say it was the greatest supper fest of all time.
Well, I've been dying to do it too. I can't go this week. I was hoping to join them, but man, I'm right behind them. I want to do it really bad. So I'm excited to hear what she has to say.
Cool. I look forward to hearing about it. Yeah. It's Oahe season.
Yeah, it is.
In like full freaking swing down there. You know, great, like, world-class water levels. The weather's been really good. But, you know, along with that, a whole lot of people as well. So, if you go, what was the phrase someone said on the Grand Ronde one time when I was looking? Like, if you're going to go, make sure you take your own camp because there won't be any available.
What day do you guys launch, Eric?
We're Wednesday. We're Wednesday this year. And actually, we had zero problems with camps on Wednesdays. But we talked to some people who launched on Thursday, and they said it was an absolute madhouse of like 100+ people.
We launched on Fridays.
How was it?
It's crazy. I was there last Friday to help our trip get launched. There were more than hundreds of people. I mean, there were people standing around saying, we don't even know where people are going to camp on this trip. I think it was so bad on Fridays because people were doing Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 3 days.
With the water levels where they were, you easily could have done that. We were doing a 5 day and we were like killing time. Like I've never killed time on a river trip. Cause you float at 5 to 6 miles an hour without taking oar strokes, like in the flat parts.
Yep.
So
the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 3 days, it was packed Thursday night. I mean, we got there around one or two, got our boats in the water, not much problem, but a ton of Boise boaters came in after work. You know, they get off work at 5 and it's only 2 hours from Boise. And it was just truck after truck after truck of boats going down, and I'm not sure what happened. We camped a hike out our first night. Our guides didn't have to go that far, but I know that 3 day schedule launching on Friday, there's a lot of people there.
Sunday, we took out Sunday and we got there early, so it wasn't too bad. Yeah. But by like noon, there was a line of boats. I mean, people were just like strapped together out in the river waiting for a spot, you know, in that like 40 foot zone to get out. Like, it was chaos. Yeah. So anyway, but it was a holiday weekend too, so that may have been part of it.
Yeah.
Oh, you took holiday weekend with good water, good weather.
I must have just missed you because I was rolling back through town on Sunday. I was at takeout Sunday, moving some things around, and saw the string of cars driving out of Birch Creek back to Boise.
Yeah, so we were one of the cars driving out of Birch.
Okay.
So.
But yeah, it's been a good season. I think. I mean, the one thing I like to pass on to private boaters out there is if you launch on Thursday or Friday and the weather's good and the water's good, it's hectic. Like, you should just expect there to be a ton of people there if the conditions are good.
And please take sites that are appropriate size.
Definitely.
We rolled into hike up camp. There was, like, on Wednesday, there was literally us, a group of two, a group of two, and a group of one. Mm-hmm. And one of the group of two launched ahead of us, and we were planning on staying at hike out, and we show up in the group of twos at hike out. Like, one of the biggest camps, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, ugh.
Did you camp there?
So, no, we went down around the corner. They were kind of taking all of it with their stuff. And, I mean, they were super nice folks. And it's not like there was anybody else out there. So we knew we were going to go get one of the spots around the corner that's pretty nice. But, you know, be considerate. Take spots that are appropriate for your size because there's not that many spots that will hold a big group down there.
Yeah. And it was busy. So I told my crew when they left, I said, you know, you guys should try to go to hike out because it's a great hike. It's a great camp. and it's good for our 5-day pace. I said, but if any groups of like 3, 4, 5 come by, you should welcome them in. Like, we were making spot. I don't know if anybody did that, but our crew was hopefully welcoming small groups to join them because we were, you know, Hike Out can handle a lot of people.
Yeah.
So also, you know, same thing, like anybody out there, please try to make, you know, make spot. If you're taking a huge camp, like set part of the camp aside and welcome people in just so we can all fit in the same canyon.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the other thing that we started to see too is even on the non-commercial side, but on the commercial side, we saw some folks getting to camps.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, or one person from their group getting to a camp.
Yeah.
Like very early.
Yeah.
Like, I appreciate the circumstances and you got to do what you got to do, but like rolling in and taking a camp at 10:15 in the morning.
That's
early. Like they were rolling into camp before we left the camp.
Oh man.
Like, we were in camp just getting packed up and they're like, you know, somebody's coming in to lock it up. It's like, that feels a little on the early side. Aggressive.
Yeah. I mean, I
get it. Totally get it.
If it's a private group or a commercial group of 15, I get it. Cause there's not enough camps for our large groups, but you know, I wouldn't think if you're a group of 6, you're doing that. So I'm okay with people.
It was a larger group.
If you need to camp and you know, you're worried about it and you're sending a person down just to make sure a 3-person group doesn't camp in a 15-person camp. Like I'm personally okay with that. Cause we're doing it too. We're doing the same thing. So, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it seems appropriate, but you know, rolling in and you know having breakfast with the group would be kind of funny.
Maybe that can be a topic for another podcast. Is etiquette on moving in and taking over camps, or when is the right time to come in over camps like that?
Yeah, man, we don't get us started on that one.
We could have a hot podcast on that one.
We could do 5 or 6 on that.
We'd piss off all sorts of people.
Yeah, I don't know if we want to go there, but you know, actually, that's a good idea, Eric, because. You know, the Rogue is changing some of their policies this year for how they're going to manage camps and doing some really smart things. And maybe we should cover that before the Rogue season.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely spawned in me like the thought about the Lower Salmon, where they just have a rule of if you don't have your whole group, like you can't get to camp until 1:30.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And that causes some problems, but it also solves some problems. And I think that'd be a fun conversation for a later time.
Yeah.
So while he's going, you know, there you have it. Yep. Don't drive past the boat check station that doesn't have very big signs. They will come chase you down and turn you around. But yeah, if you're coming from the north, the boat check station on the way to the Owyhee is not very visible. Hmm. So, life lesson.
I didn't see it. I didn't have boats with me, but I don't remember seeing it.
I had boats with me, didn't see it, and got pulled over and turned around.
Oh, jeez.
They were super nice about it.
Yeah.
But... we were like the 5th person in a row. Like we got to the put in and talked to a couple people and they were like, yeah, we got turned around too. Yeah, we got turned around too.
Yeah. That's funny.
So
cool.
Illinois season.
Yeah.
We got shuttles. We got lots of people going this weekend. We're doing a lot of shuttles for folks this weekend on the Illinois. It's going to be like prime water levels, weather, all of it.
Yeah. It's a pretty dream time to do the Illinois. I'm going Sunday and you know, Sunday is a great day to launch because nobody launches on Sundays. Everybody wants to launch on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So Sundays, I'm looking forward to our Sunday launch. And
Thursday, Friday this week looks pretty busy from a launch standpoint, just based on how many cars we're shuttling.
Yeah.
So,
and there's also, I think Aaron Babcock and Matt Kernan, both who have been guests on our podcast before, they're doing an Illinois River cleanup this weekend, which has never been done and needed because the Illinois flows through some small towns up in some farming areas and tires float down and there's trash. So thank you to those guys for cleaning up the river. It's a big project.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's very cool.
Super awesome.
On that note, there is a Rogue River cleanup coming up, I think middle of May-ish. I'll have details on it maybe next week. Cool. The wild section. So
cool.
Well, should we move on to, Zach, do you have any more news of the week?
That's all I have.
Yeah. You know, real quick up here in Idaho, like rivers are a flowing. Drove past the North Fork yesterday and that was terrifying.
Yeah.
Like we're gonna see some high flows we haven't seen up here I think in a long time on a lot of stuff. So
I ran the Locksaw on Saturday and that was absolutely amazing.
Yeah,
such a fun river.
Have you done it before?
Yeah, that was like my 5th trip. Okay. On Locksaw is actually my first time of breaking 50% on success rate for it, you know, not flipping or swimming through Locksaw Falls. So I was pretty excited about that one. It was 7 feet online.
I'm not sure what 7. I don't know the Locksaw very well. Is 7 feet big? Is that, what does that mean?
It's like medium high. you know, not super high. I ran it at 10 last year in May, and that was absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, the whole
time. So,
yeah, it's the season. Yeah. So, why don't we go ahead and introduce our guest?
Cool.
Zach, do you want to introduce Brett?
Yeah, and actually, Brett's a guest I've wanted to have for a while, just because I don't know much about him. But he's out there boating a ton, and he has a YouTube channel, Death Angle Whitewater, and you should subscribe. He puts out a lot of cool videos, and you know, hit that subscribe button, like and share. Of course, that's big. And we just want to get him on to get to know him a little bit better. He definitely has some controversial techniques that people give him a hard time for, and he eloquently fires back with why he does it. And we just want to get to know him better and also ask him some of the same questions he's asked before. So welcome to the show, Brett.
Thanks, Zach.
And yeah, just really quickly, I just want to get your background. Like, when did you learn to guide? You know, what rivers did you work on? Like, what's your background? How did you get into boating?
It's actually kind of a long process here. I started just lightly rafting personal boats when I was a sophomore in high school. My dad bought a raft, and we just kind of started doing the easy, light, you know, private boating thing. And a year out of high school, one of my best friends in high school, his aunt and uncle owned the local company here in Polson, Montana. It's the Flathead Raft Co. And I went to start working for them. And I actually worked for them about 5 years without doing any other river or really learning all that much. You know, I learned our river and I learned just the lines here. And, you know, really didn't know all that much about guiding until 1 year I finally decided to come out and run the Swan River here in Montana. It's up in Big Fork. And that was an epic, big first time doing Class 5 whitewater. And it absolutely opened up my world to rafting. And from there on out, I was starting to push myself and trying to learn different rivers and getting better at reading and getting better at leading a crew. And since then, I've just been trying to get better and run as many different rivers as I can.
Cool. Mostly in Montana?
Unfortunately, yeah, it has been mostly in Montana. It's a really long drive to get really anywhere around here. I've ran the Middle Fork of the Flathead here in Montana. I've run the Kootenai here in Montana, the Clark Fork down in Missoula, the Opportune Gorge section there. And I've been out to your neck of the woods twice now. I did a big trip last year. I did 7 rivers in 7 days in 4 states. And I was really ill-prepared for that trip. I wasn't able to get a lot of beta from people. I just wasn't in the right crowds. I wasn't talking to the right people. So that trip ended up kind of being, you know, a little bit of a shit show, you know, as you guys kind of saw on YouTube there. It was a fun trip, though, and the rivers over there are absolutely amazing. You guys really do live in the best place for that.
Yeah, no, we're amazingly lucky to have, you know, there's probably, here in Hood River, there's probably 20 different runs within 45 minutes from right. Class 1 to Class 5 plus. It's definitely nice out here. Yeah, I mean, I think that's where I first saw your video, you guys running the wind. You know, that's the first time I kind of came across your YouTube page and kind of got to know, you know, you coming out here was the studio trip down the wind. Yeah, and tell us about Creek and Comp a little bit. Like, what did you think of Creek and Comp last weekend?
That was amazing. It really was kind of a surreal moment for me. Getting to meet all those guys, Robert Delgado, Ben Sigler, Aaron Erdrich, Scott Michael, you know, people like that, people who run those kind of big waterfalls and big drops all the time. It was really cool. It was really eye-opening for me. It's a completely different style of guiding than what I'm used to. It seems like you guys over there, at least a lot of the rafters over there when they're doing the big drops, it's nothing but R2 rafting.
Yeah.
And where I kind of come from more of a, like my preferred boating style would be like a 4-person paddle crew with me in the back guiding, you know. So it's just a whole different kind of thing for there. And the Creek and Comp was amazing. It was a really well put together event, I think. Everybody had a lot of fun. There was a ton of safety, which we ended up needing a lot of. You know, I think half the crowd ended up flipping going over sunset during the mass start race.
I saw the video. It was crazy.
Yeah, that video, I don't know who put it together, of like Priscilla's photos put into kind of a like video play out was really good.
Matt Cronin actually shared a video too that was an actual put together video of the whole run. And it's amazing, you know, on top of the falls in my video, you can see it. We're all kind of bunched up right there and we look really close together. But you look at the view from down below and it looks like we're super spaced out and it's just dropping one after another, every other boat flipping. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Nice.
And where did you get? Yeah, that's. I know. I haven't seen you on a high side before. How'd you get a high side?
No, I didn't actually. So I was talking with Robert Delgado about coming out there, and I told him that I was trying to find a smaller boat from here in Montana to bring with me, just to run the race with, because my boat is way too big. I run a 14-foot Odyssey. It's 14x7, and it would have done fine in the river, just not racing.
Yeah.
And so I told him I was looking for a smaller one, and he called me back like an hour later, and he said that he talked to Sean Raquel with Goodwater Boatworks, yeah. And she let me use their boat. It was very, very nice of her and very awesome to use.
Yeah, that's a small boat, though, to go over those falls. I mean, I think...
It is a very small
boat, I bet if you had your Odyssey, you would have done a little bit better, because I wouldn't have chosen to run that boat over the falls, personally. They're not big.
No, it was definitely pretty small, but it was a lot of fun. I had a good time. Can you hear me still?
Yeah.
Okay. I hear someone in the background here, like a lawnmower, but... I have no idea, or something like an airplane flying around.
Sorry, you guys. I think my neighbor's mowing the lawn. Anyways, yeah, you know, it would have been nicer, and I think that my partner got a little overzealous. We should have maybe taken a little bit longer to look at that line. We just ended up going the wrong way and went beautifully sideways right over sunset. It's a good time. I think we put on a good show.
You definitely put on a good show. You and a bunch of other people too. It was exciting.
At the end of the day, that's the best part, anyway. So
great.
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't be talking about it if everybody had clean lines.
Yeah,
it would totally be way less interesting if everybody just did perfect. Yeah, so anyway, the one other thing I want to ask you about is your YouTube channel that I know you're trying to build. Like, what is it? Like, what's the point of it? And why is it called Death Angle? Where'd that come from?
You know, that was actually kind of a funny thing. I thought that was a lot more popular of a term when I decided to use that as the name for the channel. It was originally Brent Burns Whitewater, and every time I would go to search myself on YouTube, I would find Brent Burns, a hockey player who I guess gets in a lot of fights, just all over YouTube. So I couldn't ever find myself when I was searching. So I was looking for a more brandable name. And here on the company that I work for, every time we would hit a wave with a bad angle, we call that a death angle, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just something that could flip you, you know, not quite teed up to every single wave. We call it a death angle. And I just thought it was more of a commonly used term, which since I have created the YouTube channel, I found out that not a lot of people use that.
Yeah, I've never heard it before.
I haven't either, but I kind of like it.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. Makes
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, and we shorten it up a lot of the time to just DA, you know. Oh, he DA'd it. Oh, man, you had a wicked DA there. It's just kind of a slang term that I guess we're the only ones that use, but I thought it was a little more popular.
And tell us about the YouTube channel. Why are you doing it? What, you know, what's the goal? You know, tell us more about that too. I'm really curious about the YouTube channel.
Yeah. So, actually when I first started planning to go out there for my first time last year, over to, you know, the Pacific Northwest, I was having some trouble finding footage on YouTube of what the rivers were like and what was really going on over there. Mostly all I could find on YouTube for rafting videos is carnage stuff. Yeah. Or just big hits on one or two rapids. But I wanted to know more about the river, what is happening at put-in, what's happening at takeout, and just do, you know, a little bit of the in-between stuff. And what I was finding was the only content out there was just hard paddling, carnage, that kind of stuff. So I wanted to put together something where it shows a bit more, you know, kind of like an adventure vlog style YouTube channel for rafting. And I couldn't find anything like that that existed out there, so I figured I would decide to make it myself.
But it seems like it's a lot of you talking about things, though, like first aid or different techniques. Is it becoming more like that, or are you going to go back to like describing runs?
No, it is. I do want to do a lot more. I kind of want to branch out. I have been a advanced EMT for I think 5 years now, and an EMT for close to 10, and. I kind of got thinking about it that I haven't seen any first aid videos out there that are specifically designed towards paddlers. And my first aid video I did was CPR considerations for paddlers. And, you know, I wanted to go out of my way to describe that it wasn't a CPR video. It wasn't a class on CPR. It's just what people might be doing differently or wrong when it comes to CPR on a paddler, someone wearing a life jacket. You know, if they're trying to do compressions with the life jacket still on, I didn't want people to do that. you know, just in case that does help saving somebody in the long run. Or if someone's trying to do chest compressions on the tube of a raft, you know, it's too soft and you're not going to get the compression on the chest that you need. So you need to get them off the raft or onto the ground or whatever and get the life jacket off.
Okay.
And so I enjoyed making that video. And I actually have about 10 more first aid videos that I plan to put out over the next 6 months or so.
Cool. And do you have this? Do you have a goal to be like a YouTube star, or I mean, what is it fun for you? Do you want to maybe make a career out of it? Where are you headed with it?
It is really fun. I do love it. I don't think that I'll ever be able to get to a point where I can just sustain life on a YouTube channel. I think that our niche is just too small for that.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at some of the most popular whitewater YouTube channels out there, most of them only have 5,000 followers at the most.
Yeah.
I haven't really seen anything more than that. What I would like to do and what I've been working on is just getting it to the point where I can hopefully just get some money to travel and make more videos of more rivers. Because what I really want to do is I want to bring our life, I want to bring whitewater into more of a public eye.
Yeah, yep.
And I just want to share that with more people, because the content out there right now is just, it's kind of hard to follow. You know, it's big drops. A lot of videos out there are just big waterfalls, which are awesome and fun to watch. But, you know, it's just kind of the same thing over and over again.
I mean, that's what people watch, right? They want to see big drops and they want to see carnage, right?
Like, well, yes and no, though. But, like, people who are researching a run, like, I mean, I was just talking to a dude this morning that's been watching nothing but videos of people running the Middle Fork because he's looking at taking his raft down the Middle Fork for the first time.
Uh-huh.
And so he's watching, he wants to see, like, he would love to see a rapid of every video or a video of every rapid, you know, like a video guidebook kind of a thing. And the reality is, I think that's most rafters. You know, it's like same thing. Like you're going to go run, like folks who are going to run the Illinois for the first time. Most of them are probably going to spend the weeks leading up to it, like watching as many videos of people running stuff on the Illinois as possible. And the more rapids they see, the more comfortable.
Let's talk about this. Maybe I'm old school, but back in the day, you got a book that told you, and you put it in takeout, mentioned a few rapids, and it was an adventure, right? Are you saying those days are over? That now where people are watching YouTube videos about the trip before they do it?
Oh, for sure.
That's exactly what they're doing, yeah.
Look, I mean, in kayaking, I think it's been that way a long time.
That's crazy.
Well, you know, I mean, I think it was sort of transitional, right? Like, it started with, I think back to, what was the Pete Bagley and, it's still, their website's still up. They, you know, have photos.
Oregon kayaking,
right? Like, they've got blog entries and photos with all the major rapids and all that kind of stuff on all these runs.
So that's how I learned, right? It was books and then some websites.
This is just the next extension. As small cameras got better, as GoPros came out and stuff, it's just same idea. It's just instead of reading about it, we're watching videos.
Doesn't that take some of the fun out of reading water?
I think probably.
Well, I really hope that these people who are doing this, because I don't do it. I mean, I don't show up somewhere and just blindly run a line, you know, because I saw it online. I still read it every single time. And it is still fun getting to see a new rapid for the first time and getting to see a different place. And depending on water levels, it could be a completely different story than you know, what you saw in the video. When I was out there, you know, 2 weeks ago, I ran the Hood River for only the second time ever.
Uh-huh.
And it was high water. It was really high water, especially compared to my first time there. And I had never seen the Tucker to Columbia section before, so it was my first time ever seeing that, and it was high water, and it was some of the most beautiful water I've ever read. There's so much going on in that river. It was absolutely amazing to see.
Yeah, I mean, that's my backyard run. I mean, I love that place, so I totally agree. I think it's the lower Hood is the best run in the gorge, and people could disagree and say it's a little wide or whatever, but man, easy shuttle, class 3+, continuous. Lots of features. I'm a huge fan. So, Eric, I want to get back to this video thing. This is crazy to me. So, is there a video of the Middle Fork people are watching? Is there already a video guide to the Middle Fork that you're suggesting?
I mean,
or is he just piecing it together?
I've never sat back and watched, like, spent an hour watching videos of the Middle Fork. But, you know, I've talked to plenty of people who've done that for the Rogue. Or, like, we talk to people because they're doing shuttles or whatever. We start talking to people about their Illinois trips, and they talk about how they've been, you know, watching videos of Green Wall and all that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, that's not an uncommon thing. Like, hell, I've done that, like, when I was going to take my dory down, you know, like, the Green or something like that. Like, yeah, we watch videos of guys rowing. Like, that one for me, watching people row hard boats, like, I just enjoy watching. That's all I watch videos of dudes running, you know, their dories down.
Westwater or whatever. But I certainly enjoyed when I was thinking about going down trying to get a permit to run Westwater, like watching videos of other guys run their hard boats down Westwater certainly made like made me feel more comfortable that I wasn't going to get in there and not like get totally jacked up because it was outside of my skill set.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, you probably looked at it and saw, oh, I can row out these as good as those guys and they survived, so I should be fine. I could see that being like, you just watching the video to get a sense of the river, but do you think it's an actual guide now, kind of like books were or even web pages were?
I think that's totally happening, yeah. So, and in some ways, I think that's really dangerous. We've talked about this before because GoPro videos are really misleading. They make things look a lot smaller than they are.
Yeah.
So I think there's, I personally think there's a lot of risk to it. Sort of like YouTube scouting. I mean, that's what Priscilla called it. It was like YouTube scouting. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably like the main thing now.
You think good and bad. Watching YouTube is bigger than people reading a book or a webpage.
Yes.
That is crazy. I mean, had no idea.
Like if you think about, just look at, you're talking like way bigger than just this industry, but YouTube is the second busiest search engine out there. Like that's where people find everything is on YouTube. So it would stand to reason that that's the same place people are looking for river beta.
But right now there's no real like, I mean, so like if you go to OregonKayaking.net or some other webpage, there's tons of like descriptions. Here's the put in, here's the takeout, here's the rapids to kind of expect, here's some photos. But there's not really any. Are there guides out there, like YouTube guides to a river?
Or no, I don't think that's out there yet. But that's sure as hell sounds like a business idea.
Yeah,
sounds like a fun business idea.
But yes. I think that there's certainly like if you go YouTube Green Truss, you know, by the time you watch your fifth video, you will have seen all the major rapids probably from a first person perspective.
Yeah, but if you Google Illinois, you're basically just going to see Green Wall,
for the most part.
So should
there's some there's some out there with more than that, but yeah, it's
so should I kind of bring a GoPro on my trip Sunday and GoPro, you know, the major rapids and put together a little video? Would people use that?
There you go. I think people would use it. I think you'd probably get over time a lot of people using that.
Wow, that actually sounds like a fun job to me.
And we've talked about doing it for like the rogue day stretch, you know, for like the class 2 day stretch.
Yeah,
for people like we've talked about doing it. I've like for 8-9 years, I've had this idea that I was going to do it and just never taking the time. But I totally think there's a potential, especially for like class 2-3 rivers. I think there's a total service to be done out there for that kind of thing. So class 2-3-4.
Brett, is this probably what you're going to try to do, is kind of make little mini guides for rivers that people can use?
Yeah, that is the plan. I've got basically everything lined out to do it. And I really plan on hitting it hard. Come this spring and this summertime. Yeah. I'm going to do my local rivers here. The Swan River is such a short river. It's only a mile, but it's really, really crazy white water. And I'm going to go kind of above and beyond, and I'm going to get some footage from inside the boat. I'm going to get some footage from the shore, and I'm going to try to get some drone footage that shows the exact moves I make. You know, and that river is really dangerous. So I'm going to, you know, obviously put a disclaimer in there saying, you know, do not attempt this unless you've done it before or really know what you're doing, and go with someone who knows what they're doing, because it is a really sketchy river.
Yeah, we almost need to develop a format for what a video guide would be, right? It would almost like open up and say the name of the river. It would need to say the difficulty, the mileage. So you could open it up and there'd be like information about it, and then maybe some video of the put in, some rap. I mean, there's got to be a format for this, right? That's useful for everybody. I'm gonna try to go buy a GoPro today and maybe do one for Illinois on my trip and just see how it's received as an experiment. You got me motivated.
I think people will dig it, dude. I think people will be into it.
People don't really, I mean, unless you're me and you're using, you know, interesting styles of rafting, people don't really hate on it too much. So,
I think
that's a good transition.
I want to get to some of some of Brett's interesting safety things in a minute.
Unconventional methodology.
I mean, it's been beaten to death, so we don't need to. But I want to get back to the YouTube videos because I mean, I don't know if you guys know, but I'm trying to become a YouTube sensation right now, and it's an interesting thing for sure. Making videos and putting them up and putting yourself out there, it's hard. I'm sure Brett, you can definitely attest to that. Yes. And one thing I've learned through this is, and this is, I don't know if you already knows this, but if you get 1,000 subscribers, you can monetize, right? So what, 1,000 is a huge number. And monetize just means they put ads on your videos and you can make like 2 cents an ad. So,
well, bigger than that, Zach, the hard part, at least that I'm running into, is watch time. So you don't just need 1,000 subscribers. You also need 400,000 minutes of watch time.
Wow.
Before you can get monetized. So you need both of those two numbers there.
So
that's what I'm running into.
To help Brett monetize, because we want him out there making content, right? If he's monetizing, we get more content, which is good. I would ask that everybody just take a second and subscribe if you're on there. Go to Death Angle Whitewater, press the subscribe button, because it helps. Like, we want to get him to 1,000. And then watch his videos. Just turn them on in the background while you're, you know, doing something else. Get him some watch time.
Yeah, exactly. That would be perfect.
And because I think we would all love to have more beta. And if Brett can pay for some of his trips, he'll go out and make some more videos of these runs, which will be just more information for boaters. So I'd highly encourage everybody to help him out so we can get more videos out there. And hopefully for me, I'm just doing it as a hobby and a way to practice my public speaking and put myself out there a little bit more. But I'm going to try to make this Illinois video next week. So hopefully I actually follow through. But I think we need to figure out what a good, because again, the books had a format, you know, how descriptions were done. Web pages kind of have a format. There's not really a good format for a video guide. So maybe over the next 6 months or a year, we start fleshing out what a good format for a video guide would look like.
Yeah.
Does that all sound good?
Yeah,
sounds good.
So anyway, I definitely want to ask Brett some questions about some of his boating philosophies. I guess we can move on to that. And the first one is just, I want to talk about solo boating. And we've talked about solo boating a lot on the podcast. Priscilla and Eric seem to think it's okay. I'm pretty actually against it. And I know you do solo boating a lot. Do you want to talk about that for a second?
Like boating. Are you meaning solo boat trips?
One boat trips. Okay. Yep.
Yes, I primarily do one boat trips when I'm not, you know, working commercially. And that's mostly because the community here in Montana is fairly small as far as whitewater goes. And I'm a little bit more diehard than most people are. And I'm not really going to let that stop me from getting out on the river. It also kind of depends on what river I'm running. You know, if I'm running my backyard run here, the Lower Flathead River, it's super safe. And that's primarily what I run. You know, it's not too often that I go out and run different rivers too often. I mean, I have been lately because I've been lucky to, but it's a really safe river and I know it really well. And the odds of something happening are really slim. And it also has easy access out of the river if I need to.
Eric, how do you feel about that?
I mean, I have a personal story from this last week related to this topic. So the day we launched on the Owyhee last week, there was like two groups of two and a solo dude running his drift boat. And like one of the first major rapids, you know, something went sideways for the guy and he plastered his drift boat on one of the top rocks and upset and hopped up on the rock and basically watched his drift boat fall apart. You know, like crack around the rocks. He lost all his stuff, like lost his wallet, his keys, his beer, most of his food, like his stuff just, you know, disappearing down the river and he's by himself. And he was able to get himself to shore. But I mean, at that point, he's like down in the Owyhee and sort of in a crappy situation. And luckily, one of the other groups of two that launched that day came behind him, picked him up. And basically, he just like rode the rest of the trip. He did like the next 4 days just riding along with them in their raft.
Wow. That's
really
cool. Love them.
You know, and I think we gave him some stuff. I think a couple other groups gave him some stuff. Like the community down there all kind of supported the guy and, you know, helped him out to make sure he got out okay. But it definitely puts in line, like, if you're going to be by yourself, you just, like, there is no room for error. You gotta really, like, the 50-50 confidence that maybe you can have if you're boating with a group is non-existent. It has to be like a 95-99% confidence that you're going to be fine and really on your game, which that I think really limits the runs that people should do solo and probably the people in general that should do solo trips, right? Like
I agree with that completely, actually. You know, that ability to self-rescue, that faith in yourself to self-rescue in situations. And, you know, a lot of my runs around here, a lot of the ones that I do by myself, or as far as like solo boat trips goes, it's a short hike out. Or, you know, I don't do this on multi-day trips, and I probably wouldn't ever do it on a multi-day trip. Especially in something like that where, you know, you're kind of out in the middle of nowhere.
I think cool. It definitely changes the dynamic and the safety once you're, you know, 100, 200 miles out of town and you're in a tight box canyon. I think the risk factor jumps significantly at that point.
Well, I just want to add my two cents. Like, I'm pretty against one boat trips. I just feel like somebody can fall out and you can't get them. You just don't, you know, if you flip, then you have a bunch of swimmers in the water and there's no real plan. So I'm pretty against it. As long as you guys know the risks you're taking and you're doing it. But I hope that most boaters know that one boat trips are not a good thing for safety. And if you look at the American Whitewater Accident Database, a lot of the fatalities, a high percent, I think even like 30 or 40%, are one boat trips. And I'm not saying that one boat trips cause fatalities. I'm just saying on one boat trips, there's not somebody there, I think, to help save or rescue a swimmer, and that
right.
There's more fatalities than not with one boat trips. And that
what I'd be interested to find out is, because that percentage could be misleading, right? If of the total number of boat trips, 10% of them are one boat trips, but 30% of the deaths occur with those, then that statistic really says something. But if 50% of all boat trips are one boat trips and 30% of total, you know, fatalities are one boat trips, then that statistic actually says a different thing.
Well, I bet that only of all boating that happens, I bet only 1% is one boat trips at most.
I would totally disagree with that.
No way.
Grow up on the Rogue. There's one boat trips all the time. I mean, 90% of drift boaters up on like the day stretches of the Rogue and stuff are one boat trips.
Okay, that's the day stretch.
The most popular, the most common wild and scenic trip number is two.
I get that.
There's more parties of two than anything else down there. And those are all one boat trips.
Yeah, that I can see what you're saying on the Rogue. But if you go hang out the White Salmon, you know, you'll see 30 kayakers launch before you see, you know, a group of five or a group of 10. Like, if you look at the number of people the boat, you know, a non-one boat trip can have 20 people on it. So yeah. In terms of the number of people boating, you know, there's not that many doing one boat trips. Just because a one boat trip is one person, a multi-boat trip is between 2 and 20.
You see more than you think. I've seen a ton of people. One boat trips, Rogue one boat trips. Like, it is a larger number than I think you think it is.
All right. I don't think it's a high.
I'm not saying it's a good idea. Just saying I think there's a lot more people out there doing it.
All right. Well, I would say like on class. Yeah. We can have this argument at a different time.
Those are all class B-ish runs, right? So that makes a big difference.
Well, I don't want to say that. I was about to say it's okay if it's on the Rogue, but it's not. It's still not okay. It's still like you're taking extra risk. I think the difference with the Rogue is there's just a lot more people out there, you know, and if you swim in Wildcat, there's a big warm pool before the next rapid versus swimming on the Hood where you could swim for a mile. I mean,
And I think that totally makes the difference. I'm with you. It's not even the classification. A lot of it is the nature of the river, the remoteness, like kind of all the things that Brett was saying, you know, it's like, it's not one thing. There's a whole lot of contributing factors that should apply to your decision-making process.
Yeah. Let's move on to go ahead.
When I was out there 2 weeks ago, I put out on a few of the Facebook groups asking if anybody wanted to join me when I was on the Hood. And it was one of those things where at that point I had traveled too far, and that was going to be my warm-up for the weekend, and I was going to run it one way or another. I was really hoping that people were going to show up and run with me, but nobody did.
Well, two things. That doesn't justify it, just so you know, that nobody wants to go. I don't want people to... I personally would rather people didn't go than go with one boat. But man, I would have loved to have joined you. I just didn't see those Facebook groups. I think we're in different Facebook groups.
Probably. I'll make sure to message you next time.
Yeah, if you come to Hood River, like I live here, so like I'm happy to paddle with you. And I'd rather people boat with other people, so I'm happy to come along just to help be a second boat. So I would have happily joined you guys if I knew.
As we were putting on, there's actually two kayakers up there with us, and I was kind of hoping that they were going to hang out, but they took off pretty quick.
Yeah, sometimes here in the gorge, people are trying to get it quick after a workaround. Like, I'm going to go paddle this afternoon, and my buddy has a date. You know, he's like, we got to do it quick because I have a date. You know, it's kind of like that. It's very quick and casual.
Yeah.
Let's move on to talk about the center line again. And I know you've done some videos about it. And you run a line down the center of your boats for people to hold on to. And I don't think we need to beat this one to death, but I know that you saw some of the guys here in the Northwest rig a center line for R2ing. Did you see, what did you take from that? Did you see any new techniques or any new thoughts about the center line?
It's actually what I saw down there this weekend or last weekend was quite a bit different than what I do, mm-hmm. actually. I got to look at Robert Delgado's boat. And I actually ended up rigging up that high side the same way that Robert does. And I saw in the videos, a guy named Jordan Luce does the same thing. And he was there for that event as well, where it's a single cam strap that goes between two of the thwarts or three of the thwarts, depending on how many there is. And that strap actually goes on the floor as well. So that does add a strap on the bottom there. And personally, I didn't like that as much. And it's a completely different kind of style. I mean, that's definitely more for just our tubing style. That's like a waterfall grip strap, basically. Something to reach out and hang on to. It's a little bit easier to grab because it's in the open. A lot of the argument has been for the air thwart straps. You know, people tell me, oh, run this instead. It's safer. And probably. I mean, I can't really say one way or the other, but because I haven't had any issues with mine yet. But having it out in the open, it's a little bit easier and quicker to grab, especially in a big, intense situation like that. You know, you're not reaching for one small handle the size of your hand. You're reaching for a strap that runs the entire length of a boat, mm-hmm. basically.
And so you said you did Robert's setup for when you guys ran the Lewis. And did you like it, though? Or did you...
Yeah, you know, it was similar. I was more conscientious of my foot down there and that strap that's on the bottom.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really any different. And I think I might have actually liked my setup so I could reach behind me and grab instead of just right next to me and grab. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure you've seen my videos. And when I've ran the Kootenai River, we are four over the small waterfall there. It's like a 6-footer. It's not too terribly big. Just because I haven't been there for high water yet and been able to run the bigger waterfall there. But when we run an R4 on there, I'm sitting on the back seat and me and the person next to me reach back and lean behind us and grab the strap. Instead of right next to us, grab the strap.
Yeah, when I did the Lewis last year, I didn't use a center strap like those guys use. We used a strap that went across the back thwart, mm-hmm. and then we put our arm under it and our elbow on the thwart. I'm not sure if that makes sense.
Like an elbow hook? No, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, we did an elbow hook, and it's not something I would normally run on most rivers, but to keep us from flipping it at the falls, I was like, well, let's hook our elbow through the strap. Just going over this one drop, and it really helped. We were stoked on that.
Yeah, you know, it's really great having something that can just really keep you in your seat.
Yeah.
One thing that really drives me to continue to want to use mine is some of the bigger water that I find here. The biggest wave on our river here on the lower Flathead at its peak is about 15 feet high. So you'll stand an entire 14-foot boat up in it. And, you know, you'll be touching the bottom and the top of it at the same time. And those things will really rock you. And those are times where in my centerline video, I talk about, you know, in quotes, advanced high siding, where you grab onto that centerline and you actually lean out over the boat and you get a lot more of that weight retention over the boat. And you're actually able to high side a little bit harder by doing that. And I haven't really needed it as much on a lot of smaller rivers and a lot of smaller waves.
You can get that same. You can get that same action using like the thwart handles, you know, like where you can lean out of the boat. I watched your video, and one of the things that it seemed to me that I prefer about the idea of the thwart handles. I mean, I think you're right about the quickness to grab and some of those things totally being accurate. Having a bigger strap is easier to hold on to, or easier to grab when you're not looking.
Right.
But one of the advantages it seems of the thwart handle is that you not only have the left-right stability, like you can lean left or right and you've got a handle holding you, but you mm-hmm. also forward and backwards. So, you know, like if you grab the strap right kind of in front of you, you're in the bow, whatever, like it helps you if you're going out the left. Like if you're grabbing with your right hand, it's going to be helping support you go out the left. But it's not nearly as supportive if you're like going over the front as like the thwart handle would be. Because it's not going to go with you. Like your hand's not going to slide up the handle. It's locked in place.
Right.
Whereas on the line, your hand can slide on the line. And so like going forward and backwards in the boat, it doesn't seem like it probably adds as much stability as that thwart handles would.
So I think you're correct. Yeah. Because I mean, and the thwart strap is also just tied down tighter and isn't going to move as much, where the center line does have some some side-to-side movement once you get out there in the middle of the bow kind of area. And so that there's a movement to it. And I just, you know, it's better than nothing.
Yeah.
And I really do like the quickness and the availability to reach out and find it without looking. It saved me several times from going out the front before, where I high-sided and missed the rope and ended up catching it on my way out the boat and ended up doing like a weird spin move on my stomach around the bow and stayed with the boat, stayed in the boat.
Right. Cause you were just able to kind of hook it on the way out.
Yep.
I can see that.
Well, I disagree with all these extra lines, but I think that's the beauty of talking about this stuff. I think people out there can make their own decisions or at least have input on why things are good and bad. So I definitely appreciate the discussion about it. I'm very anti extra ropes, even like the rope around the outside of boats. I try to avoid
the strangle strap.
The strangle straps, yeah. And man, speaking of the Oahe, it is. There were a lot of strangle straps down
it
there.
It is like strangle strap heaven down there.
Oh man, that was like a candy store. The hard part, I'm trying to take photos of them all, but it's really hard because people are standing by their boats down there. You can't just walk up to people's boats and photograph them with them watching. But man, I was like a kid in a candy store trying to collect photos down there. That was amazing.
I look forward to seeing them on your Instagram page.
I got a couple up. I have one more I'll try to get up today. But awesome. Man, it was something else. But yeah, I mean, I think we just took this International Rafting Federation guide course, which you would dig. It's just the instructor that taught it was amazing. And he's super against this stuff too, but he really strongly believes in what he calls the OS line, the outside line or perimeter line, what I call a danger rope, and Eric calls a strangle strap. And he convinced me of how useful they can be for sure, those outside lines, and showed me a really cool technique to tie them in a way you can tighten them if you need to. Because my main issue is people just don't ever tighten them. They're just super loose. And if they're tight, I like them, but the problem is people make them hang down and their entrapments.
I think they're actually really useful at certain types of rivers if they're done correctly. Yeah. But right. I'm with you, Zach. I think most of the time they're not done correctly.
So when I put them on my boats at the company, I actually get them wet before I put them on the boat.
Super smart.
So I can stretch them out as much as possible and then tighten them down tight. That way when they dry, they're super tight. And then I know that once they get wet, they'll loosen up again, but at least they won't get loose from what is already loose.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Totally.
Yeah, and what he showed us, this cool technique where you tie two of them, one on each side. So not just one rope all around, but one from the bow on each side to the stern. So it's less length of rope to stretch. And on one end you tie a fisherman's, just like a single fisherman's on a D-ring. And the other end you tie a girth hitch backed up by two half hitches. That way, if you need to tighten it, you just undo the half hitches, yank on the girth hitch a little bit, and do the half hitches again. So it just takes like a minute to tighten it at the most.
Yeah, and that's really cool.
You can tighten it side by side. So I was pretty excited about that technique. It was cool to learn that because I'm going to use them on the Illinois this next week, knowing that I can keep them tight. When they have really complicated knots to tie them, I just strength like tightening them is a huge pain when they're just super complicated knots and you know they're in there in a weird way. So I was excited about that.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, that sounds like it's really effective. Maybe
I'll show you guys when I see it. It was a cool technique. We learned a ton of cool techniques and just interesting.
Maybe you should do a gear garage video on it.
Well, I should. The hard part about doing gear garage videos with rafts is I have to inflate a raft and I have to put it in my garage, which is always full of stuff. But what I need to do is inflate a raft in here and do like 10 episodes. Somebody asked me to do an episode on tying spare paddles in a boat. And I'd love to do it. I just don't have a place to inflate a boat and do a show. But someday, when I have a studio, when Gear Garage has 1,000 followers and I'm making the big bucks, I'll buy a studio.
We should just do it in either your new warehouse or ours down in Southern Oregon sometime when we're down there.
Yeah, you know, I always intend, like, every time I go to one of my warehouses, I intend to do a show and I bring the camera and everything, but I'm just so busy with work. I never, never sit down. And then there's also people around, and taping yourself is a really awkward thing. You know,
that's been my big thing against it is, like, I always, It's not the putting the video up that feels bad. It's the having other people see you making the video that is the part that's really yeah. hard.
You don't want people to watch you. Like, once in a while, my wife will come in the garage while I'm taping, and I'm like, oh, sorry, honey, this is super embarrassing, I know. I get it. And I like to try to make sure nobody's going to bug me or see me doing it, because it's just really weird talking to a camera by yourself. So, yeah, I always intend to do it at our warehouses, but it never do.
Yeah. On my trip over there the other week, I did several like selfie videos talking yeah. about my drive over and stuff. And, you know, I'm doing this at the gas station or at a rest stop, and people yeah. are watching me. And it takes a long time to get over that awkwardness because I'm still not over it.
Yeah. Sub Paul's really good at it. I've hung out with Sub Paul a few times. And Sub Paul basically lives behind a selfie stick now when you hang out with him. And he's getting really good at it. I think it's becoming more normal to be like a vlogger and have a camera with you. But right. I'm super self-conscious about it all.
Yeah.
But I'll be down on the road. I'll be down there Saturday, so maybe I'll do an episode Saturday if I get the nerve.
But should we do our gear of the week here?
Yeah, we should wrap it up for sure. And should I start?
Sure.
So one of my gear of the week is this Rock Exotica machined pulley, and so I was just reinvigorated through this IRF class that we did on swiftwater rescue techniques and what to carry as a guide and some new technology that's out there. And there's this company, Rock Exotica. Have you guys heard of it?
No.
I hadn't either. It's a U.S.-based company that makes super high-quality pulleys, all kinds of crazy things. And they make a mini pulley that is machined instead of stamped. So it's just really high-quality metal and well done with a sealed bearing. And it's the lightest mini pulley out there. And they're about $60. They're not cheap. But I used it quite a bit, and I was really impressed by it. So for those of you that carry pulleys with you, this is one that you can put two of them in a pocket of an Astral vest, those little side pockets. So they're small, they're super high quality, and because they're sealed bearings, water doesn't get into the bearings. We opened up a lot of people's pulleys that carried pulleys in their PFDs for the class, and a lot of them are rusted or barely worked because they'd gotten wet so many times. So having a sealed bearing is, I think, important.
Yeah, these look cool.
Yeah, I'll put a link to them in the show notes. They're nice. They're quality. And Rock Exotica, they make really great carabiners and a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, this stuff looks awesome. I was kind of skimming through some of it.
Yeah, really well made. I've historically bought Petzl stuff for our safety gear, and I probably will continue to because Petzl makes really good stuff. But this Rock Exotica company is a U.S. company, so I always like supporting, you know, U.S. companies.
Absolutely.
Cool. Brett, do you have just a piece of gear that you love? Like something that is like your kind of go-to thing or something unique?
Oh, man. I do have something unique, but I think it kind of goes against some of the rules on the river.
Wait, hold on. Before we do this, Brett, that I feel like you break every rule I believe in. So like, and like, I appreciate you just like saying, hey, that's who I am. That's how I roll. Like, you justify it the best you can, like go for it. But like you break all of my safety rules.
I do.
I'm okay with it.
Man, I got a ton of gear that I really like. I don't know why, but I kind of want to talk about this one right now. It's not even something you can buy. I have a rock that I keep in my vest at all times. And I call it Shotgun Rock. Because before every single trip I do, me and my crew shotgun one beer. Yeah. And it's got a perfect little hook on it, and it goes in the side pocket of my Astral. And it stays with me all the time. And it's also got a nice flat edge. So, you know, if you're not on the river and you're drinking bottles, you can open a bottle with it too.
Oh, Brett, man. Okay, so there's two problems with this. The first one's the drinking before going boating, which I'm against, but cool.
I know.
The second one is you're putting a rock in your PFD. Your PFD floats you, and you're choosing to put a rock in it to take away from your flotation.
It's a very small rock.
Okay.
I'll send you a picture.
Okay.
Yeah, I...
So wait, yep. So your gear of the week is a rock you use to shotgun beers.
Yeah.
Classic.
Yep. Outstanding.
I told you guys weren't going to like it.
I like your style. I like your style. I just want the world to know it's not okay to shotgun beers before you go boating.
Generally, I would agree with that. All right, so my gear of the week is for a couple of years, I have been calling and emailing Chaco because they stopped making the Zong, or there was some other version of it. But essentially, it's like a high performance flip flop. So it's like kind of like their Z2, but didn't have a heel strap, so you could slide it on and off, but you could really still swim in them. Like you can walk hiking in them. Like they're better than a flip flop, but you can still slide them on. So it's not like a Z2; you have to take two hands to put them on and that kind of thing. Like, right. So they're rad. Chaco stopped making them like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. I called him, was like, hey, do you have any hiding in your warehouse? Like, I wear these 200 plus days a year. I need these sandals. You got to figure this out. Like, I was buying used pairs off eBay, whole deal. And my last pair finally blew out like last spring and no more to be found. And I got an email from Chaco like 2 weeks ago or whatever showing their new sandals. And bam, they've reinvented the Zong. It's called the Tegu or some, you know, ridiculous name, but T-E-G-U. I ordered a pair. I wore them on the Owyhee all last week. There's some pieces I don't like as much as I liked on the Zong, but they are still by far the best, like, high performance flip flop on the market. They're rad. They are.
What's guys the price point on them?
Like $90, $85, something like that. I was hiking in the Owyhee wearing them, like hiking up Pruitt's Castle and stuff in them. You know, not necessarily the most advised from a rattlesnake scenario, but solid otherwise. I'm a believer. So Chaco, as I wrote in our notes, like, way to pull your head out of your ass and reinvent your best sandal. So I'm stoked on it. Like I've been so excited about having Gear of the Week for like the last 2 weeks because I've been years waiting for this. So,
are you taking credit for them bringing it back?
No, not in the slightest. I mean,
I think you should.
I should, right? I've talked about it publicly many, many times. I have emailed and called them. So, you know, I'd like to think I influenced their decision-making.
Which color did you get? I'm looking on the website right now.
I went all out and got the orange ones.
Oh, they have straight orange ones?
It's like orange with some sort of graphic-y things, yeah, you know.
I see that one. Huh. Cool.
Orange torpedo, you know.
Yeah, I get
all it. All of our stuff's orange. It sort of fits.
I get it.
So, and I can find them. They don't hide in back corners of the closet. They're bright. You know, it's good. So, nope, I'm super into it. It's rad. Way to go. Way to go, Chaco. Sweet. You did something right.
Yep. Good job, Eric. Good job bringing them back. I think they probably heard. I think we talked about this in the podcast once. I vaguely remember this.
So, I brought it up at least a couple times, I think, on the podcast. In fact, one week my Gear of the Week was how Chaco sucked because they took these. So. That's weird. So here we are.
Cool. Yeah, they look really cool.
Awesome. Well, you guys should get some because they're rad, and I don't want them to go away again, so we need to make sure people buy them.
Yeah,
cool. Well, Brett, thanks for hanging out with us this week and telling us about your set of mine, your rock and your life jacket, and all the other fun things that we talked about. I'm excited to go boating with you here one of these days. So if you come through Idaho, if you find yourself in Riggins, look me up. Cool. Well, thanks for hanging out and listening. If you liked what you heard, go subscribe wherever it is you listen. Tell your friends about how rad we are. Rate us on iTunes unless you don't like us, and then don't rate us on iTunes. You'll be able to find links to some of the gear from today, minus the rock, on our website, therivertalkpodcast.com. And who knows, we may even have a picture of the beer opening rock on there.
We need it. If you send it to me, I'll get it on the website.
All right. Go out, get some of that big water that's out there right now. Paddle with your friends. Don't paddle alone. Be safe. Come back next week. All that kind of fun stuff.